There was a long discussion between the six friends over the noon meal. Ryan and JB were both leaning toward the idea of getting out of the ville before evening came, and the pair of promised sacrifices. Yehu had arrived with the silent serving girls, who carried in trays of food. The food wasn't as good as it had been, as though everyone in Quimbley had been shaken by the death of the young man. But Ryan's suspicion was that the depression was linked to the vastly more serious fact that Moses hadn't been allowed to enjoy his anticipated luncheon of fresh-caught fish. There was cold potatoes, lumpy and dull, scorched on the outside and partly raw on the inside. A mess of peas, gray and heavily salted. At least the bread was good, and the butter tasty. Dean looked at the horn beaker of water that Christy had poured out for him.
That come from the lake?
Of course. They don't seem to have any wells here. There's no need, I guess.
I don't really want it. Got the blood of what's-his-name. You know, that Calvin the pike crushed. I don't want to drink it.
I confess a certain sympathy with the lad, though I share the opinion of the great W.C. Fields on drinking water. He wouldn't touch it because he said that fish fucked in it.
Doc, I'm shocked at your language, and you a Harvard man.
Only a light-hearted jest, madam. It was not my intention to offend you, or to offend any lady here present. My apologies.
Only kidding, Doc. Actually, this water tastes good enough to me. I wouldn't have dreamed of drinking it back when I was alive before. Most of the lakes, rivers, and seas were filthy with all kinds of industrial and chemical contaminants. If you fell in some lakes in the United States of America and swallowed a couple of mouthfuls, then you probably wouldn't make it to the next dawn. They were that bad.
We should get back to the subject of leaving or staying. Look, lover, if you and JB think we ought to make tracks, then I guess the rest of us will go along with that.
My guess is that we'll probably be leaving young Michael behind here.
Serve him right.
You and Michael have really fallen out, haven't you?
Yeah. Gone all big-eyed and wet-mouthed over that strawhead slut.
Christy pushed back her chair.
Better watch that mouth, Dean. Dorothy might be many things, but she's not a slut. You get in the easy habit of bad-talking all women, and you lose all respect for women. You'll be calling Mildred and me sluts next.
Sorry, but she's trapped Michael into changing. Maybe she's a witch, Dad.
No. Michael may have fallen for Dorothy. Might be in love with her. Wouldn't surprise me. It happens, Dean. One day, it'll even happen to you.
No way at all!
When the arrow strikes at the heart, Dean, it will pierce through the strongest defense. And even the bravest and boldest will fall a helpless captive.
Not me, Doc.
Ryan got up and looked casually out of the doorway, making sure that none of the young people of Quimbley were close enough to overhear them.
You think Michael might remain here, Dean? Think about it. It's a serious question.
What if he does, Ryan?
Well, then he stays. Time came for Jack Lauren to pull out. One day it'll come to all of us. If Michael decides that his own personal future lies here with Dorothy, then that'll be what happens. It's his decision.
I think they sort of want to be together, Dad.
How about us, Ryan? Are we going to stay another night or move on while there's light?
Ryan looked out of the thatched hut at the range of close-packed wooden buildings. The narrow lanes of the ville were almost deserted, with most of the people out in the fields or the forest around.
Stickies are out there somewhere, I'm sure of it. We can make the redoubt in about half a day or so. Wouldn't want to find us stuck in the evening gloom in these woods.
So we wait until dawn, lover?
Yeah. Move tomorrow at first light, but keep that to ourselves.
We telling Michael?
No.
Ryan and Christy walked out across the causeway onto dry land. Strolling together along the beach, they ignored the curious glances of the young men and women working in the allotments and orchards of the ville. The sun had dipped partway below the horizon, leaving a golden carpet that stretched toward them across the calm water. The storm had eased away, bringing only a brief shower at around 3 o'clock, barely enough to lay the dust.
Where are they going to do this chilling?
I don't know. Has to be close, or Moses won't be able to get to see it. I can't imagine anything happening in this sick place without his knowing all about it.
Look.
100 yards ahead of them, emerging from the sable shadows at the edge of the pine forest, were Michael and Dorothy, hand in hand.
Young lovers.
When they saw Ryan and Christy, the couple hesitated. Then they approached. Michael looked unhappy.
Fine sunset.
Yeah, it is. Is your neck feeling okay, Ryan?
My neck?
Yeah, he still got that bit of bandage on it from the mutant creature in the ghost town.
Ryan's wound had healed so well that he'd almost completely forgotten it. Once in the night, he had woken with a brief stab of flaring pain, but it had quickly passed. He lifted a hand to touch the place.
It feels fine, thanks. How are you?
Better. I think that the last jump and the ghost town sort of moved my brain around loose inside my head. You know how it can be, Ryan.
I sure do.
But you are feeling better now, aren't you, Michael?
Sure. Lots.
That's good. Can any of you smell smoke at all?
Could be. Probably the cooking fires from the Ville.
No, not wood burning. I'm sure there's gas as well.
We didn't see anything in the trees, did we, Dorothy?
Depends on what you mean by anything.
Michael blushed and pulled his hand away from hers.
You know what I mean. No fires or anything.
All right, sweetness. I'm sorry if I upset you. You know I'd do anything but that.
Dorothy laid a hand on his arm, then stretched up and kissed him softly on the mouth, her blonde hair blowing across both their faces.
You going to the ceremony, Michael?
Sure. Everyone will be there, Ryan. You aren't leaving the Ville before that, are you?
No. Why do you ask?
There's something I want to talk about before you go.
Before you go? Not before we go?
Yeah.
Christy watched the teenager carefully. He was looking toward the setting sun, and she saw that his dark eyes were completely veiled, showing no more emotion than a piece of fresh quarried slate. His mouth was a thin-etched line, and he wouldn't actually look either Ryan or herself full in the face. At that moment, she was certain that Ryan had been right in his guess. Michael and Dorothy wouldn't be separated. Unless something very unexpected happened in the next 24 hours, the six of them would be making the next jump without the curly-headed teenager. Dorothy and Michael headed back to the Ville, while Ryan and Christy walked a little farther along the coast of the enormous lake. But the sun was sinking fast, and they only had their hand blasters with them.
Best get back.
Sure.
Lover? What do you think Michael was talking about? What does he want to say to us?
Goodbye.
With all that's going on here, for now it would be a good idea if you stay in your quarters until you're sent for. I've brought some food so you don't have to go out in the Ville.
Where's Michael? You seen him?
He's with Dorothy. Which means he's also with us.
Not an outlander, Yehu?
No, Ryan. Michael is neither one thing nor the other. But within a day or so, he may have completed his choosing and will speak with Moses.
Yehu turned and left the guest hut. Supper was a hasty and cursory affair, a stew of apples that was so thick you could have cut it into slices, providing you had a sharp enough knife, some sourdough rolls with cherry jelly, and a large bowl of cold boiled potatoes and carrots. None of them felt all that hungry, though Ryan insisted that everyone eat as much as they could handle.
Might be the last food for some time, depending on when we make the jump and where it takes us.
The Ville was in semi-darkness, with only an occasional torch burning smokily in wall brackets. They followed the blonde figure through the narrow, twisting lanes until they reached the larger open area directly in front of the conical thatch of Moses' dwelling. It seemed that everyone was there, standing in solid blocks, the little children, shepherded by a few of the teenage girls, then the older children, all silent, as though they were overawed by the occasion. And around three sides stood the rest of the young people. Though there were ripples of movement, Ryan wasn't aware of anyone actually speaking. He looked around, his eye turning to the roof of the Temple of Moses. At first, because of the shifting orange glow from the torches, he wasn't entirely sure of what he seemed to be seeing. Then he concentrated, his sight accommodating to the gloom. There was an opening in the dense thatch of reeds, square, with light glinting off glass. Behind it, there was the pale blur of a figure, though it was quite impossible to make out any details. But Ryan realized that Moses was present, watching the proceedings through his own window. Yehu pointed to a space in the front row, to the left of the square.
Over here. Then you can both see and be seen, watch and be watched.
Where's Michael?
There.
Yehu pointed with one hand toward the mass of people on the opposite side. Ryan looked as well, thinking he saw the tentative wave of a hand among the crowd. But it wasn't easy to be certain. He half-waved back, then thought better of it.
Wait. You see that some of us carry our blasters with us? You must not interfere with what must happen, you understand?
Sure. It's your party.
and you can cry if you want to.
No talking, please.
Yehu lifted his right hand over his head, in a signal to someone standing on the opposite side of the square. Christy slipped her hand through the crook of Ryan's arm, and he could feel that she was trembling with the growing tension of the ritual. Yehu was still by them, his face turned upward, staring with wide eyes at the inconspicuous window in the roof of Moses' stone-built home. Ryan looked up and saw a tiny flicker of light, no brighter than a firefly. And then they all heard the familiar voice, echoing around the mill.
Welcome to the time of pleasure. A time to be birthed, and a time to take the long road that winds not.
Sounded to me uncommonly like a nickel-and-dime TV evangelist preacher who has unfortunately swallowed a compendium of quotes.
You live on borrowed time, oldie. Hold your words.
Each of you dwells well here in our home of Quinley. Outside is plague, and the dark angel of death escorted by the Pale Riders. To live outside the Ville is only a worse, longer way. Do you want that way, brothers and sisters of the Ville?
No!
5 and 20 is the number, and 5 times 5 shall be the sacred counting.
4 and 20 shall be too little, and 6 and 20 too much, and 7 and 20 shall be right out.
As the day has its measure, and the year its turning, so shall each of us have a span allotted. Not a doubtful, troubled time, rife with worry, but a time that we know. We know truly of our coming in and our going out, and the grace that lieth with us at exit and entrance. What is the reward of those who tread the righteous path, brothers and sisters?
Light and life!
And what shall be the lot of those who transgress against the word of Moses?
Darkness and death!
Ryan's right hand had slipped down under the cool butt of his 9mm Sig Sauer, without his even being aware of the movement.
How shall they enter that darkness, brothers and sisters? How?
Through the flame, Moses! Through the flame!
Oh, Gaia, look!
Suddenly, everything had become very clear. The call for the flames, the path to the endless darkness for those who had gone against the word and laws of Moses. The two victims appeared, surrounded by an honor guard of the tallest young women in the Ville, all carrying rifles at the high port. The Outlander rapist was first, naked, his hands tied behind his back. His head was sunk on his chest, and he shuffled his feet as he walked, not seeming to be aware of where he was or what was happening to him. Heinrich, the renegade youth who had chosen to try to defy Moses and his laws, followed close behind. He walked with his head up, looking scornfully from side to side, once spitting at someone who whispered something from the crowd. The eagle eye of Moses missed nothing.
Let us have silence and dignity, brothers and sisters of the Ville.
Dean pulled at his father's sleeve. He pointed at a pair of large cages, roughly the size and shape of a man, made from tightly bound narrow strips of willow, being carried by a number of men from the Ville, toward two stout wooden stakes that were driven into the ground beneath the watching Moses.
What are those things for, Dad?
You'll see.
The older man stumbled as he was tied first to the stake, then the wicker cage was strapped into place around him. One of the younger women poured some clear liquid all over him, and the woven container that held him. The pungent smell drifted across the square.
Lamp oil.
They're going to burn him, Dad?
Yeah. Both of them, Dean.
Bastards!
Yehu turned and glowered at the boy.
You could have been one of us, boy.
Wouldn't join you if you offered me all the Jack in Deathlands!
Ryan patted his son on the back. Now it was the turn of Heinrich to be imprisoned.
No! No! No, don't do this to me! Spare me this ordeal! Let me go free and I'll never come back to Quinley again! I swear it! Show me mercy, I beg you!
Silence him, sisters!
It can't be wrong just to be old! No!
The nearest woman brought the butt of her rifle around in a crushing blow to Heinrich's groin. He doubled over, flat on his face in the trampled dirt. His whole body convulsed.
I have no wish to bear witness to this most barbarous performance. I shall return to our quarters with anyone who wishes to accompany me.
You were warned, Oli.
Yehu started to bring the barrel of his own blaster around toward Doc. But he stopped when he found himself staring down the gaping muzzle of Ryan Sig Sauer. with J.B. Zuzi nudging him in the ribs.
A little violence is a wonderful thing, is it not? Carry on with your bloody ritual, but you carry on without me.
Doc turned on his heel and began to walk back toward their quarters, pushing an angry young man out of the way with the iron ferrule of his sword stick. Mildred strode after him.
I think I'll keep you company, Doc.
Dad?
Yeah?
Mind if I go after Doc and Mildred?
Of course not.
You staying with Christy and JB, Dad?
I guess so.
I'll see you in a while.
Ryan half-turned to watch the slim, live figure of his son picking his way through the darkness after Doc and Mildred.
Best for him not to watch this lover.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yehu stood watching them, frozen in an impotent rage at their betrayal of one of the most important of the Vale's rituals.
You keep looking at me like that, Yehu, and you'll miss the main event behind you.
Are you speaking to me, Oldie?
Must be. You're the only one here.
Just for a spaced heartbeat, he thought the ponytailed youth was going to go for him, and his finger took up the first pressure on the P226. But then Yehu managed to regain self-control and ostentatiously spun to watch the ceremony.
For betraying us and all our brothers and sisters, the sentence shall be...
Dead!
Lover?
Wait.
Something's wrong.
Where? The chilling, you mean? Of course, it's...
No! Something else.
Christy's head turned wildly from side to side. Ryan looked around, but there wasn't a sight or sound of a threat.
What?
Not a sight. Not a sound. The forest by the lake was totally quiet. Quite bereft of the usual nocturnal range of bird and animal noises.
Light the fires!
Two of the smallest children stepped forward, each holding the hand of an older girl, each holding a blazing torch in their other hand.
No!
Yes, my dears.
The wicker baskets caught fire at once, blazing with a truly ferocious intensity, a golden light that shaded into orange and crimson on the shimmering air above the two cages.
Gaia, help their passing and make it fast.
Breathe in the fire and they're dead in seconds.
The flames reflected off the lens of JB's glasses, veiling his eyes. Many of the watchers had fallen to their knees, their hands pressed together, their faces radiant in the glow of the twin fires. There was the smell of roasting meat, and barely audible above the piercing cries, the noise of sporadic gunfire, with a bright blaze beginning near the main gates into Quintly.
Got company. Sounds like the Stickies have come calling.
All the pieces of the jigsaw locked instantly together in Ryan's mind. As he ran toward the causeway, Sig Sauer at the ready, JB on his right hand and Christy on his left. His combat memory was ticking off the clues he'd ignored. The figure seen among the trees during the Illstart fishing expedition. The smoke that they glimpsed, dismissed by Moses as being just beaver hunters. The smell of the fire when he and Christy had bumped into Michael and Dorothy. But above all, and Ryan blamed himself for having let it pass him by, with the unnatural silence out there among the tall pines, a silence prompted by the lurking, slinking presence of the Mutie enemy. As they drew closer to the main gates of the Vale, the fire grew brighter.
Throw pitch on it and set it alight. No bastard guards at all.
One on top, coming over.
Christy stopped and drew a bead on the ragged figure that clung to the large spikes that decorated the wooden doors. Ryan and the armorer ran on. The surging mass of Moses' people were on their heels, surrounding and passing Christy before she could begin to run again.
Lookout towers, both sides. You take left.
The beechwood ladder was well made, and Ryan ran up it with the agility of a great cat, hardly having to steady himself, reaching the narrow walkway that ran around the inside of the high defensive walls of the Vale. He peered cautiously over the side toward the causeway below, seeing the Sticky's fire reflected in the dark, sullen waters of Champlain Lake. On the opposite side of the gates, JB also looked down, his Uzi at the ready. There were black, sticky gobbets of tar stuck to the timbers, burning with a smoking yellow flame. Dancing outside were no more than a half a dozen Stickies, three of them struggling to raise a crude siege ladder against the wall just beneath Ryan. There was ample light.
Something's wrong here.
Ryan was already being jostled by some of the young men and women. Yehu was right at his shoulder, and all of them were shooting wildly down at the surviving Stickies. JB's words jarred Ryan, and he half-turned, staring toward the forest, wondering where the rest of the gang was. Stickies had brains with all of the reasoning power of dead sheep, but even they would hesitate to attack a powerful fortified Vale in such small numbers. Under a hail of lead, The last mutiny was down and done for. His body literally shredded to a bloody pulp. Immediately, Yehu waved his Remington hunting rifle above his head, his expression contorted with savage delight.
With Moses as our captain, how can we be defeated?
Ryan caught JB's eye across the gap between them. The armorer hadn't fired a single shot from the machine pistol and gestured with it, back toward the heart of the ville. He was looking worried rather than triumphant, heightening Ryan's concern. Below them, Christy was looking back over her shoulder. The crowd was thronged so thickly on the narrow platform that Ryan could hear the supporting timbers creaking. Several of the teenage girls shot at the corpses, making them twitch and jerk.
Yehu, get everyone off here or the whole place could go down!
At first, the blank blue eyes didn't register any understanding. Then the danger of their position reached Yehu, and he gradually restored a kind of order. Ryan pushed through and climbed quickly back to street level, where JB joined him and Christy.
If they'd had a lookout posted, then none of that would have been necessary.
Suddenly, Michael was with them, Dorothy hanging on his arm.
I just knew what would happen. He can see the future.
Yeah, it's over, and we won. Praise to Moses, we won!
It came from the far side of the ville, where it protruded farthest into the huge lake, and they all heard it.
Doc's Lamar.
JB set off at a dead run toward the sound. Yehu had reacted surprisingly quickly, loping alongside Ryan.
What's happening?
Attack at the front was a trick.
They've come in from the water and broken in, taken our little ones.
Ryan sprinted through the darkness at top speed, his arms pumping, Christy close behind him.
Taking our friends as well.
They passed the open square, where the remains of the two wicker cages were now heaps of glowing ashes, containing what might have been a collection of blackened branches, had it not been for the smoke-darkened skulls that lay empty-socketed among the ruby embers. Quindley was small enough for them to be able to run from the entrance to their own rooms at the rear in less than 50 pounding heartbeats. Ryan didn't waste time looking up at the roof of Moses' shrine.
All will be well, brothers and sisters. Listen to me, for I say all will be well.
Fuck you.
But Yehu skidded to a halt, nearly falling over in the dirt.
We must listen and obey! Listen and obey the word of Moses!
The place is on fire, near where our rooms are, the back!
Ryan could smell the tang of blazing pitch, smothering the ghastly stench of the burned corpses, and he could see the orange glint of light between the buildings just ahead of them.
Wait!
Now they could all see what had happened. Read the story of the successful trick that the Stickies had managed to play on the ville. A trick that would never have worked on 49 settlements out of 50, with sensible lookouts and sentries constantly alert against such a sneak attack. They had come in from the lake, in boats or rafts, and crept in over the back wall, while their suicidal companions had given their lives to distract the inhabitants with their feint at the front entrance. Now the whole of that segment of Quindley was well ablaze, fountains of sparks erupting 50 feet high from the dry wooden walls, floors, and roofs. The Outlanders' sleeping and eating quarters were already an inferno of scorching heat, the flames roaring as they consumed everything. Christy shaded her eyes against the ferocious glare, trying to look past the raging fire across the lake.
See anything?
It's impossible. I guess they came by water. They're leaving the same way.
No corpses.
JB looked behind, where the mood of the ville had completely changed. The bravado and delight had vanished, to be replaced by grief and mourning at the loss of all the children who'd been stolen away.
Could be there. They might be dumped in the lake.
Ryan knelt and tried to look inside the nearest burning building, but it was impossible. He straightened again.
Yehu, get your people to work on putting out those fires, or you're gonna lose the whole damn place.
Moses hasn't given us the order to do anything!
Wait for an order and you lose your home. Come on, you double stoop!
Yes. Yes, I guess. Water. Water. Get water and put out the fire!
Put water on the nearest building first! Can't save those already burning, but you can soak the others and rescue them from the flame spread. Get to it!